welcome everybody to this retreat, 9-day time to really relax and to develop the beautiful peaceful meditations of the Lord Buddha, and to be able to use those meditations to develop very, very deep and profound insight. So those of you coming from overseas, you'll find this is a very, very beautiful retreat center. Everyone's got their own room, so you don't have to worry about people snoring on this retreat. So one of the advantages of having your own room in a retreat center like this is that you don't always have to sit meditation in this hall. This is not the only place to meditate. If you want to, you can meditate in your room. Or if it's a lovely day, you can meditate out in the garden. Hopefully each one of you has seen the beautiful garden outside, which we have free use of. And it's a wonderful place to be able to sit under a tree or do walking meditation. And because you're protected, it's quiet, secluded, and it's all for you. So by having these resources where you can either meditate in your room, or you can meditate here or out in the garden or do some walking meditation, it means that you have the freedom to use this retreat according to your own schedule. We do have a rough schedule, and you may have seen that on the notice board. Is it on the notice board now? Schedule? No schedule at all.
It was read out.
It's read out, okay. So you'd always, it's a strange thing, you may not always know the time to get up in the morning, but you will always know the time when it's breakfast and lunch. So there's something about the mind which always remembers the important times of the day. But other than that, the rest of the day is really for your use. And you know, we do, I usually get up about 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes in here at 4:30. You can get up early if you want to, get up later if you want to. Especially the first few days here in this retreat, don't push too hard. A 9-day retreat is more like a marathon rather than a sprint. So you gently build up your energies, your mental energies. If you push too hard in the beginning, you get too tense. When a person gets tense, they cannot really develop the beautiful, peaceful meditations. So be careful not to actually to force too much at the beginning. After a while, you'll find that you want to get up early in the morning simply because you have the energies of the mind. They're becoming strong. You're becoming happy. It's just nature. But the very beginning of a retreat like this, don't worry about sleeping in. If you're very fortunate and have got a good friend living next door to you, you may even be able to talk them into bringing you breakfast in bed. But I don't think that's likely to happen. Please go and get your breakfast in the dining room like everybody else. But the point is here that I remember a retreat which I gave in Sydney some years ago. And I always remember this one lady who was an executive in some important business in the CBD of Sydney. And when she came to the retreat and she heard me teach that to take it easy in the first few days, she was one person who heard, understood, and followed those instructions. And she told me at her interviews that the first couple of days, she would literally just wake up just before breakfast. She'd go in and have her breakfast, then go back and sleep again. And that's what she did for about the first 2 days. But in that retreat center, it was like a dormitory style, so there's about 4 or 5 people in each room. So she said for those first couple of days, the other women in the room with her were looking at her with just such wild anger. As if, what are you doing that for? You should be getting up early in the morning. But I told her, that's not anger, that's jealousy. Because they had the guts, they would like to do the same thing. And I watched this lady's progress the first couple of days. She slept a lot. And after 2 or 3 days, she started to relax, she started to get more energetic, and she started coming to the morning meditations. By the end of the retreat, she was sleeping very little. because naturally her energies had arisen. She'd overcome what we call these days sleep deficit, and she was relaxed, her mind was bright, and she was one of the best meditators in the whole retreat. I tell you that story because some of you have traveled a great distance to get here. Some of you have been working very hard. Some of you may have even just rushed from work to get here, like me. I was working all day and rushing from the city centre to get all my business done to come here. So if you've been working very hard, you can expect to be tired. If you expect to be tired, you should take a rest. That is why that first few days we keep it kind of loose. So don't look at the clock too much. If you look at the clock too much, sometimes we become a victim of time. We have to get up at a certain hour, even if you want to get up earlier. Sometimes this happened in Thailand, we used to get up at 3 o'clock. But sometimes you wake up at 2:30 and you think, oh, it's too early. So you turn over and go to sleep again. And you end up getting up at 4 instead of 3. The point is, 2:30 is okay to get up. Get up. And if you feel tired, you can get a sleep later on in the day. Or 3:30, be natural about your bodily rhythms. And that way you will find, as I've found teaching retreats over many years, by being natural, you would actually sit meditation more. The first times when I started teaching meditation in retreat centres here, I would follow the normal routines which everyone else taught. There'd be a morning bell at 4 o'clock. We used to have this bell, I'm not sure if it's still here, this loud bell, like being in school again. Ding, 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 ding. And that really stressed people out. And they had to get up at 4 o'clock, or 5 o'clock I think, we made it 5 o'clock here I think. And people would get up, and they'd get on here, and they'd fall asleep. They'd be nodding all over the place. They didn't nod, they'd just fall over. And it was just a complete waste of time. What are you doing that for? And they'd go away afterwards, staying in 9, 10 o'clock. When it got to 9:30, everyone would leave, because they had to go back to bed to get up at 4. It's a stupid way of having a retreat. But then when I stopped ringing the bell, you know what we call when we stop ringing the bell? You know what that's called in retreats? That's right, you've heard that before. No bell silence. So this is what we have, no bell silence in retreats, means no bells. When I stopped ringing that bell, then I found an amazing thing. I'd get up, because I'm used to getting up at 4 o'clock. Used to get in here maybe 4:30, and there'd be lots of people who'd already been meditating here before me. And when I go back to my room maybe about 10 o'clock, there'd be still other people still meditating here. I got much more meditation out of people when I stopped ringing the bell. Strange thing, when you stop controlling things, everything flows more smoothly. When the traffic lights go out in the city because of some failure of the electricity supply, that day there's few traffic jams. The traffic flows more freely when there's no traffic lights. Also, some years ago, I was told that in Israel there was a strike of doctors in the hospitals. And then a couple of weeks when the doctors weren't working, the death rate, the mortality rate in the hospitals went down dramatically. I do hope there's no doctors here. But that was actually true, it happened. So here, by not having such a fixed and tight schedule, you'll find you will meditate more. And it will go more smoothly. Which means that even this evening, if you feel, yes, I want to meditate more, then go for it. Allow just the mind to decide. How long you need to meditate, not the clock. And some of you think, oh, I can only meditate for half an hour, 45 minutes or an hour. Forget about that. When you sit down and meditate, just see how long you need to meditate for. Don't go into meditation thinking, oh, it's 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours or 10 minutes or whatever. because you don't know what's going to happen. The future is uncertain. So let that all go. Just stay in the moment, present moment awareness. If you stay in the moment with the meditation, it becomes a natural quietening of the mind. You'll sit as long as the mind feels it's comfortable, as long as it's productive. But if you have to say, I have to sit for, say, an hour, then sometimes some of you, may be sitting for 45 minutes, it starts getting pain. If you're not getting anywhere, if you look at the clock, oh, I have to sit for another 15 minutes. And again, that's called stress. It's wrong to sit then. It's much better to get up and go and walk or do something else. Other times, you may be sitting for 1 hour, and after 1 hour, Ajahn Brahm rings the bell. Think, oh, 5 more minutes and I'd have been enlightened. Now, because of that, it's very, very bad karma for me to stop people being enlightened, so I refuse to ring the bell anymore. Just in case. Again, in that Sydney retreat, when I did ring bells, someone wrote to me afterwards, they had a love-hate relationship with me. They hated me when I didn't ring the bell early enough. And they loved me when I rang it sort of too early, when they were having pain. So, it's a crazy being like a bell ringer, trying to control people. So it's much better that you just meditate quite naturally. So, this evening after the talk, you can meditate if you wish, you can go and walk out in the garden, have a cup of tea at any time. The only thing which I'd ask you is to be quiet. So don't go chatting to anybody, especially those of you who have come from overseas. You may know the history of when we started having people coming from overseas. Some people from one country, they almost got thrown out the first year. And they almost were being banned from anyone else coming from that country, coming to retreat again, because they talk too much. And their talking actually disturbed others who wanted to remain in silence. So that's one golden rule for this retreat. Please, be quiet. Don't talk to each other. You may find it hard the first day, but the second day you find, oh, this is actually quite nice, I don't need to talk to others. And the third day it becomes so natural. When you get to the ninth day, I usually have this little bit of fun on the ninth day, especially the last day of the retreat. I usually tell people that at lunchtime they can talk to each other now. A lot of people, they don't want to talk. Oh no, I'm having such a wonderful time. Because you talk every day of your life. This is the wonderful time you don't have to talk. It's how peaceful it is. We don't have to say anything. So that's a golden rule on this retreat. If anyone is caught talking, what punishment should we have? Maybe to do with that breakfast and lunch for the day? Or is that a bit too tough? But whatever, please don't talk. Because that disturbs it for other people. The exception will obviously be when it's question time. That's in the evenings, or if it's to one of the managers, because sometimes something needs to be done or you're sick, and you can't say that when you're getting a heart attack, try and do it silently. So be reasonable about this, but most of the time, please keep absolutely quiet. So no talking to anybody, especially your friends, the people you've come here with. So when we keep that quietness, that's a golden rule here. But getting up at any time is not a rule at all. Any time you like, you can get up and sit in here. Any time you can go and have a rest. Don't think you always have to sleep at night time, or you have a nap after the meal, or you can't sleep this time, or you must sleep that time. Keep it natural. If you're sitting meditation here and you feel like you're getting a bit tired, or you're feeling it's not working, you're getting too stressed, too tight, that's a great time to have a rest. You know, it's every year this happens, that when we have interviews and I ask people how the meditation is going, sometimes, especially in the afternoon period, People have come in and saying, oh, you know, my meditation's no good, I'm not getting anywhere, I can't be quiet, oh, I maybe have a headache, oh, I don't know if I can stand it any longer. My advice is just, okay, go back to your room, have a nice nap, don't set the alarm clock, however long you want to sleep, sleep. When you wake up, go and have a shower, cup of tea or something, a fruit juice, and then come and meditate. Now you wouldn't believe just how I've got 100% record when that I give that advice. They always come afterwards and say, thank you, that was one of my best meditations of the whole retreat. You know why? Because they relaxed. Because their mind was rested. Because they weren't forcing anything. When the Buddha was about to become enlightened, he went to the river Nirantara. This was just flowing past Bodh Gaya. He put his bowl in the river and made a resolution, if I am about to become enlightened, may my bowl flow against the stream. And the bowl did go against the stream. It was not just an omen for the future. It was also an indication of the way to become enlightened. To go against the stream, the ordinary way of doing things. To go against the controller, the craving. That which comes from your sense of self, the ego, the me. That is why relaxing, taking it easy, is actually going against the stream of your life. All of you here have been trying so hard since you were born, at school, in your marriage, also in your career, always working hard, striving. Where does that get you? Especially you've learned how to strive very hard. That just makes you tense. Now I'm asking you to go in the opposite direction, against the stream of craving. To relax, let go, be content. That is the other way. It's a way which does lead inwards. It leads to peace. It leads to letting go, renouncing the world. Which is why we keep a simple schedule. No bells. You know, when is the breakfast time? 7 o'clock, is it? 7 o'clock breakfast until 8 o'clock, isn't it? So you get in at 7 o'clock, 5 past, 10 past, get yourself some breakfast, you can sit on the tables or take it outside if you wish. 8 o'clock we have a talk, usually. 9 o'clock afterwards some interviews, those people want interviews. And a lunch about 11 o'clock, 11:15. Is it 11:15, 11:30? 11 o'clock, okay. And then the afternoon is free time to meditate, sometimes with some interviews. And the evenings there's a little talk, usually about 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock? 7, isn't it, usually? 8 till 9, okay, the talk. So have these nice little breaks during the day when you have talks. You can sleep any time, you can meditate any time. What, you can sleep in the day and meditate all night? And people do that. Sometimes it's lucky to do that. Because at night time it's dark and quiet. Great time to meditate. So make it natural. Just enjoy this retreat. The other rules are that on keeping quiet, we just have these 8 precepts which everyone is expected to keep, which is not killing any living being. So if you have any mosquitoes on you, be kind to them. And the worst thing is actually, if you've got a mosquito on you, just try to flick it off. I used to do that many times as a monk. You flick off the mosquito, and all they do is just fly up a little bit, couple of inches, and then go back and bite you somewhere else. So you get 2 bites for the price of 1. It's much better to let them bite you than have it all opened up and just have 1 itch rather than many. And usually by the time you know they're on you, if there's any fever or any virus that's already in you, so it's a waste of time squashing them. So leave them alone. So we don't kill any living beings. We don't steal, we We can't, nothing much to steal here. The only thing is maybe just sneaking into the kitchen late at night, going in the refrigerator, so that's out of bounds. There's always can have all these other things in the afternoon. And there's no, no sexuality. So in other words, there's no men or women on this retreat. That's why sometimes, you know, that sometimes we split it up in some retreats, women on one side, men at the other side. Having it all mixed up like this, it means that there are no men, there are no women on this retreat. It's just meditators. And number four, no lying. Obviously, that you're not speaking, you can't lie. So that one's all pretty well sort of settled. No alcohol or non-medicinal drugs. If you're on some medication prescribed by the doctor, that's fine. I have to say that because sometimes people misunderstand. They may have some sort of medicines which the doctor's given them. Please carry on taking them. And for those of you who are on medication and you have to have something in the evening, that's okay, you just tell the manager, you just have something simple, because sometimes people have to have something with antibiotics or other stuff which they may be on. So that's okay. The whole purpose of the next precept, they're only eating in the morning time, is just simplicity, so you don't have to worry about eating later on in the evening. If you need something like a spice of bread or whatever, just talk to the manager, they look after you. They keep it nice and simple. Compassion is most important. And then we don't have any jewelry or makeup, songs and dances. So even if you become enlightened, please don't dance up and down and sing, because that would be breaking your precepts. If you become enlightened, just keep it to yourself. So no singing and dancing. And lastly, we don't use luxurious furnishings. Your bed is simple. You can sleep on the bed if you like. You don't have to sleep on the floor. If you want to sleep on the floor, that's fine, but the bed is okay. In other words, we keep it simple. The whole point of those other precepts is simplicity. So just, you know, eat just in the morning time. Usually you don't have to eat so much when you're meditating, because you're not running up and down. The brain isn't using much energy. You shouldn't be thinking too much. So you find you don't need so much. For those of you who are afraid, they're like, ooh, I'm not going to eat, from, 12 o'clock until 7 o'clock the following morning. That's 19 hours without eating. I'm not going to be able to manage it. Don't think about it. It's very easy to do. And there's plenty of fat left in each one of our bodies. Some more than others. So it doesn't really matter. Actually, happy in fact is quite useful in meditation, because it means you've got a low centre of gravity, you don't nod when you get sleepy. That's my excuse. So whatever. So this is actually just the simplicity. When you're meditating also, you can use cushions, you can use stools. Because we meditate many, many hours here, some of you can get very sore legs or sore backs. You know the best way of overcoming the problem with sore legs and sore back? Sit on a chair. That's why we have these chairs here. And you'll find that sometimes you get much better meditation on a chair than you do sitting on the stool. Even the Buddha would sit on a chair. So are you better than the Buddha? Thinking, oh, I have to sit cross-legged in full lotus on the hard concrete. Bumpy concrete is even better because I'm tough. Don't be stupid like that. The whole point of your sitting posture is to be able to put your body in one particular position so don't need to worry about it anymore. Sometimes you can sit on the ground, fine. Sit on a chair if it's aching, fine. Wherever you want to sit, but what you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to wheel your bed in here and sit on that. Otherwise, everyone put their bed in here listening to the Dharma talks, laying down. So please don't do that. Other than that, everything's okay. Now, you can see that some people think, oh, this is not being strict enough. Oh, Ajahn Brahm should be more tough on us. Oh, you know, we should get one like these Zen sticks, and if anyone is not here by 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll go to your room, beep, beep, beep. Now that's not the way of Buddhist meditation.
That just actually makes you even more tired, more tense, more scared. It may be difficult at first following this way, this middle way, between the extremes of mortification or hurting oneself or being tough on oneself and being too loose. But follow that middle way and you'll find it does bring results. Give yourself a couple of days to settle in. Don't expect too much at the beginning. Give yourself time to rest. Give yourself enough to eat. Give yourself exercise. A walk in the garden outside. Don't be too hard. Second or third day, you'll find that the mind and the body just really want to get into it. And you find you will naturally want to meditate more. This whole part of meditation, the reason why we go in is because we stop controlling ourselves. We let go. This is one of the old stories which I tell. So I just wrote this out yesterday, having to give a seminar in Indonesia in January, and they wanted my talk written down so they could translate it into Indonesian. It was a story of that disciple who was meditating at home and got into such a deep meditation that when his wife went into the room, my one of my favourite stories, I love telling this because it's really a true story but also fascinating. He usually only meditated for 40 minutes, but after an hour he hadn't come out of his bedroom. So his wife went in to check on him and saw him sitting there so still. Absolutely still. Too still. He wasn't breathing. So she called the ambulance. And the ambulance men came. And they checked his pulse. But they could find no pulse. So they laid him flat in the stretcher. Hurried him into the ambulance. And went screaming. Well, with a siren screaming through the streets of Perth. To St. Charles Gairdner Hospital. One of the main teaching hospitals. Here in Perth. And there in the hospital. They couldn't find a pulse at all, the medics. So they put straight away the ECG to try and see if there's any heart activity. And on the monitor there was a straight line. Ding, 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 ding. Emergency. It was cardiac arrest. So they put the EEG on his head to see if there's any brain activity. But it was just another straight line. Ding, 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 ding. Emergency. He was brain dead. But it was extremely fortunate that the doctor was an Indian. His parents were from India. Otherwise, they'd have taken him down to the morgue straight away. And imagine what would have happened in the morgue. If he'd have come out of his meditation in the morgue, he'd have probably killed all the people working in the morgue. And they'd ended up with the people that he used to look after. But instead, the doctor put defibrillators, these machines which put electric shocks through your body to try and stimulate the heart into beating again. Many times his body sort of arched up with the shock, but his brain on his heart just didn't respond at all. Until he decided to come out of his meditation. He opened his eyes, and when he opened his eyes, the alarms on the ECG and the EEG stopped. And his heartbeat was very quickly back to normal again. And he sat up and said, "Where's my bedroom? I was in my bedroom. How'd I get in here?" And that's a true story. But the point of the story in this particular case is that I asked him, "What did you do that time which was so special?" And what he said, which many other people have said who've got into deep states, he said, "For the very first time, I really let go." Remember those words? To really let go. He did nothing. He just allowed the mind to become peaceful. He got out of the way. And it happened all by itself.
Now that's really important, because that's an example of many people who learn meditation by just getting out of the way and allowing the mind to come together. You will find that the reason why people don't get peaceful in the meditation is because you try too hard. So what the reason? Meditation is the easiest thing in the world if you could only let go and let it happen. But too often we've been controlling for all our lives. That's the stream of our consciousness, always to get in there and control and do it, make it happen. We haven't got the patience or the courage to allow things to happen. It takes a bit of patience. Because when you start letting go, sometimes you get scared. It's not happening, it's getting worse. Ah! Be patient. You've got 9 whole days. See how much you can let go, how much you can abandon. That's why I call this way of meditation Third Noble Truth Meditation, as opposed to Second Noble Truth Meditation. You may know that in Buddhism, especially Theravada, there are 2 types of meditation. And those 2 types of meditation, you go anywhere else, and people say, yes, Samatha Vipassana. And sometimes they ask you, what retreat are we doing? Is this a Samatha retreat or a Vipassana retreat? This is not a Vipassana course. This is not a Samatha course. This is not an Anapanasati course. This is a letting go course. Third Noble Truth. Letting go of craving is the path to Nibbana. Craving, doing, wanting, striving, controlling is called Second Noble Truth. And Second Noble Truth, according to the Buddha, is a path to suffering. Do you want to suffer? Hands up if you want to suffer. If you want to suffer, you're crazy. But why is it we make ourselves suffer? We make all these demands. Right, this is my 9-day retreat. I hear that Ajahn Brahm teaches jhana. I want jhana. Or I'm going to ask for my money back. I'm going to really work. I'm going to get it this time. I'm going to crack it. I'm going to do it. I know even monks think like that. And they meditate for years, never getting anywhere. Don't try and crack it. Crack the doer. Stop all this cracking business. If you do too much cracking, you go crackers. So just let it all go. Relax and allow the mind just to become peaceful. Ajahn Chah, so often, he would get his hand out like this. I can picture him now. And he said, the mind is like a leaf on a tree. He waved his hand like this. He said, why does a leaf on a tree go up and down? It's not the nature of the leaf to go up and down. It's because the wind is blowing it. If you take the wind away, the leaf will start moving less and less and less until it stops. Because it's the nature of the leaf on a tree to be still. It only moves because of something outside is making it move. The nature of your mind is like the leaf. It's supposed to be still. The only reason it moves is because you make it move. You do something. You're not happy here, so you want to go somewhere else. That's the problem. So forget about wanting to go somewhere else. This is good enough. So just sit here. See what happens. But don't demand anything. Don't want anything. If you want something else, you'll never be still. So you build up stillness, you build up peace, you build up contentment. Peace upon peace upon peace. Stillness within stillness within stillness. Contentment upon contentment upon contentment. That's the way to meditate. This is good enough. So you stop all this striving for something else. Striving always goes on to the next thing.
calm, contentment, peace goes in to where you are now. This is where enlightenment is. Not in the next moment, right in the very moment you're experiencing now. You need to go into it, not on to something else. The jhanas, enlightenment, are in this very moment. It's like a present, this beautiful jewel, but it's wrapped in this oily cloth. Layers and layers and layers of oily cloths. And you think on the outside, this is oily cloth, this is terrible, you throw it away, you're looking for something else. It's in this very moment, no matter what it is. Sometimes you think this moment is hopeless, it's useless, I can't make use of this. But inside this is the jewel of enlightenment. You don't need to throw away any moment. That's why controlling is stupid. You allow this to be. And then the cloth unwraps all by itself. It's amazing just how you can do meditation from the most unlikely of beginnings. Sometimes if you're sitting meditation there, you start, you cross your legs or sit on a chair and you think, oh, this is not going to work. But just be content. Don't try and go anywhere. And you find from the most unlikely beginnings, you get the most unexpected of results. I remember once one of the extremes was I was having typhus fever in this hospital in northeast Thailand 30 years ago. I remember that hospital very well because it was traumatic. When I just went in there, you know, if you've got typhus fever, you're just really feeling so weak and just so out of it, and also a bit scared as well, because this was in Thailand 30 years ago, it was a third world country, and that was in Bangkok. When you got to the provinces, that was a fourth world country. When you got to the monk's ward in this hospital, that was a fifth world, or sixth world. And at 6 o'clock, I noticed that the nurse left their station. In this ward with about maybe 20 beds, these monks sick with so many diseases. By 6:30, the night nurse still hadn't come. By 7 o'clock, there was no one there. So I whispered to the monk in the next bed, should we let someone know the night nurse hasn't turned up? And the monk in the next bed said, there is no night nurse. If something happens in the middle of the night, that's just bad karma. Ah, I want to go home. There were 12 hours. There's no one there to look after you. You're in the bed. There's no alarms. If you died, that was just bad luck. But when, in the morning time, when the doctors did come and see you, the other traumatic part was this nurse. Because I had some sort of fever, and they didn't actually know it was scrub typhus, you know, for many years actually. So they thought it was maybe a typhoid, maybe something else. So usually what they do is just give you a cocktail of antibiotics, hoping one of them would work. And they'd inject it into your buttocks. But the problem was, in those days they did not have replaceable needles. They had the same needle, they used it many, many, many times over. In Bangkok, and then they sent them up to the provinces to be used again. And after they'd been used in the ordinary wards, because you were in the monk's ward, they put them in the monk's ward last of all. Oh, that was so, so dull. And the nurse, she was actually built like a water buffalo. Big, strong. Because you know, some of these, you know, people in the northeast, they grow up in the fields, and they're really strong. I remember this, you know, this when we were building our monastery, Wat Nanachat, there's a big termite mound, and that 4 or 5 of these Thai villagers, these tough guys, were trying to tear it apart with mattocks. And one of their wives came over and said, get out of the way. And with a mattock, she demolished it in an hour. It was unbelievable. She was really tough. Much tougher than the blokes. So we had one of those. Stabbing you. And she did actually stab. Bang. Oh, that really hurt. It really did hurt. You know, it was a tough month, but that really was a bit too much. Twice a day. Oh, so it really sore. It's terrible.
don't know why I started that story. It was a process. But anyway, you know, where did that story start from? I don't know. Sorry? Oh, that's right. I did have good meditation. That's right. So, had all these very sore buttocks, having a fever, so, you know, you just really feel so tired. So, actually, I remember going to the toilet, because you had the whole line of beds. I was about six beds away from the toilet. And no one to help you, no bed pads. So, you had to sort of get up and hold yourself, which is, you know, very unsteady on your feet. And you'd make a lurch for the next bed and held onto the railings and steady yourself for another 2 or 3 minutes before you went to the next bed. You're holding on to the, you know, the railings on the edge of the bed, one after the other. It took about an hour to get to the toilet. I'm not joking. And then you get into the toilet, you sit there for a couple of hours to make sure you've got your money's worth. And then you make the expedition back again. So that's what it's like being sick in those days. And so that you did, with all those sore buttocks, feeling really sick and really depressed and really, this is really hopeless. That was about 3 weeks, I think, I was in there at this time. I think I was in there to a total about 4 weeks. And then I decided, enough of this. I decided, let's stop complaining, let's stop messing about, let's meditate. And I was just lying on my side, I don't know what I was lying in, and I decided to watch my breath. It's amazing, I got into this really deep meditation. Now, in the middle of a fever, really sore, no energy at all. And I remember coming out afterwards, and the first thing I noticed was just my posture. There's a leg this way, an arm that way. I never saw that meditation posture in any book on how to meditate. What it proved to me is that you can get into deep meditation at any position if you know just how to let go. Sitting cross-legged in full lotus with the straight back, with your fingers just slightly touching, with one, the right one over the left one, facing east. It's not important. I've proved that from my own experience. Just get your body comfortable as you can. It doesn't matter if it's sick or it's aching. Just as comfortable as you can make it, and then forget about it. Let go. Stop moving. Stop trying. Stop. Just be content with what you have. Even if you're in pain, be content with that. Stop trying to get rid of it. Allow it to be, and then it all disappears. And you go in eventually. If there's any complaining, the slightest bit of complaining, you'll never get into deep meditation. Any wanting, any ill will, and it does not work. A full contentment, you sit here, okay, just relax, let go. Let go of this little person inside saying, come on, do this. This is not good enough. Come on, try harder. Come on, move this. Come on, do that. Shut up. So allow the mind to become still. So there's no one inside giving orders. And then you just find it just happens quite naturally. You really let go. You allow things to happen. It's the nature of the lead to become still. It's the wind which keeps it moving. It's the wind which you've got to see. And you stop that wind. And you notice your mind get more and more still. It's an effortless meditation. And that's just the most beautiful part. Each one of you, I'm sure, is going to get into some degree of effortlessness during this meditation retreat. You're going to be sitting there one time, and it's just, oh, it's just so easy. Sitting here, you're happy, your body is light. There's no struggle, you're having a good time. Oh, this is easy, this is so wonderful. That's good meditation. Completely effortless. And you realize just what we're talking about. You just made the effortless more and more deep. Trouble is sometimes you get effortless, it's getting really, really good. Okay, what do I do next? Silly question. You're not supposed to do anything next. There is no next, there's only now. Stop this future business. Have you ever noticed all the doing is about future? You've lost the present moment. How can you do anything in this moment? It's already here. You're stuck with it. It's already come. It's too late to do anything. So stop doing things. in the present moment, if you really know what that means and you rest in there, there's nothing to do. It's here. Too late now. So that way you can really let go. You can relax and be at peace. But sometimes we lose that present moment, we lose that non-doing, and we go into our old habits, make it very peacefully meditate. Oh, this is really good. Come on, carry on. You've messed it up again. Well, you want to go deeper. You're getting so deep. Okay, what's the next? What's the next level of bliss? I want more. Give me more. Come on, more. That's sort of the craving which stops you developing deep meditation. So just let go of everything. If that's all you learn in this meditation retreat, how to let go. Oh, you've done so much. Have you ever noticed letting go and compassion, loving kindness is the same? You know that book, The Door of My Heart is Open to You? Do that with this moment. This little moment now, whatever you are, I can be in pain, I can be tired, I can be hungry. This moment, the door of my heart is open to you. No matter what you are, come in. Embracing every moment like that is another way of calling letting go. Giving your attention, giving this mindfulness to the moment. Giving without expecting anything back. If you expect something back, okay, I'll follow Ajahn's method. But it doesn't work. Who said it's going to work? Give yourself to this method expecting nothing back. Then it works. If you want something out of this, it's not real letting go. It's doing business. I will follow this method if I get something back. That's not letting go. So we give expecting nothing back in return. We love this moment, no matter what it is. We're kind to it. We're peaceful. Even if you're in pain, the door of my heart is open to you. I give my attention to this pain. I've been calling this recently unconditional mindfulness. I usually use that word unconditional loving kindness, but I'll change it to unconditional mindfulness. So you're mindful of this moment without putting any conditions on what you're mindful of. No conditions is going to change to be like this or like that. It's mindfulness just for the sake of being mindfulness, mindful, giving your attention to this, not asking anything back, not demanding. We've got this chart we do in the morning, it's the Metta Sutta, where it says for someone not to be demanding in nature. In your meditation, don't be demanding if any moment. That's called letting go. That's called compassion. That's called effortlessness. And when you become effortless in your meditation, you sit here so much longer than those people who put effort in. If you put effort into your meditation, you can only sit for so long, maybe 2 hours, 3 hours. Effortless, you sit for five. Sit all day. It's easy. There's nothing moving your mind. And that's where you start to experience the beautiful bliss states of meditation, the bliss of effortlessness. Oh, so wonderful. This is the life. Sitting here, effortless, doing nothing. Mind is still, no problems, no worries. Oh, isn't this great? Hopefully you feel like that. Oh, this is so wonderful. Being on the retreat in this moment, no cares in the world. Completely free. If you have more freedom in this retreat than you have in any other place in the world. I want to get Mr. Bush on one of these retreats to show that craving is the enemy of freedom. All those people who are struggling, you're people who don't love freedom. That's what he says, isn't it? Something like that. But anyway, if you love freedom, then make that. Free your mind. Don't be a tyrant of your meditation. Be a compassionate, kind person who can accept and let go. So that's what we do in this meditation. We get bliss that way. And just the mind just starts to become so bright and so happy. So joyful. And it means also that the mind, because it's not moving, because you're not making it move, it becomes still. You start to see really deeply. It is from a still mind that you see the most deeply. And you'll experience that also in this retreat. One of the things which I've been saying recently is that you will find on a retreat the food tastes more delicious than you've ever tasted before. I noticed that even on my first retreat. My first retreat was done in Cambridge, in a boarding house, where on the menu every day was stodge, stodge and stodge. It was not exactly haute cuisine. It was actually probably sort of very, very low cuisine. Man, those boarding houses were noted just for how much food they could actually put on your table, which cost so little, which always tasted the same, no matter what it was called. But this one retreat was for 9 days. I couldn't believe it. The food was actually delicious. It actually tasted nice. And I thought, we must have struck lucky. We must have got some cook who was better than the average run-of-the-mill sort of landladies in boarding houses. But I realised later that was why. It was just ordinary stodge, stodge and stodge. But my mind was peaceful. My mind was still. You could actually appreciate the taste more. It wasn't the food. It was my palate. My mindfulness was deeper. So you could actually appreciate the food much more. And you'll find when you come to the second, third, fourth day of this retreat, that food, that's delicious. It just shows you what happens when your mindfulness gets strong. You get more out of whatever you experience. Your senses become clear. So later on when you leave this retreat, if ever you have the good fortune to go out to an expensive restaurant, make sure you meditate for an hour before you go out, so you can really appreciate this beautiful cuisine rather than wasting it. Or if you go out to some beautiful concert with this fine music, in order that you can even get more happiness out of it, meditate for a couple of hours. So your senses are just fully alert. Point being here is when you get mindful, when you get peaceful, you see more and what you see is more beautiful. You get happy, but you also get deep. You see the deep insights. It's those deep insights which mean the most, which can even enlighten you. So this is not just calm. It's insight. Insight leads to calm. Calm leads to insight. These are like Siamese twins. They cannot be separated. And I'll talk more about that later on. We're going to focus mostly on the breath. Anapanasati. So some people say, Ajahn Brahm is teaching Anapanasati retreat. That's Samatha. No. The Buddha said, in the Anapanasati Sutta, number 118 of the Majjhima Nikaya, that anyone who practices Anapanasati, who fulfills the mindfulness of the breath practice, fulfills the 4 satipatthanas. So by focusing on your breath, you're doing satipatthana meditation. I love to confuse people. I love to rebel against the normal way of saying things. Because people say satipatthana equals vipassana, anapanasati equals samatha. That's stupid, that's wrong. That's not according to the Buddha. The Buddha said, you can read it for yourself, anyone who does breath meditation fulfills the 4 satipatthana. So this is satipatthana retreat. Only differently than you've ever done before. This is also anapanasati, samatha, vipassana. It's a whole works. So, hopefully you get bliss. And in that bliss you get your deepest insights. You start to see things you've never seen before. You find later on this retreat, 6th or 7th day, your meditation starts going well. I might even ask you to see if you can remember who you were before you were born. That's fun. If you like to know, well, meditate deeply. and see what happens. In other words, follow the instructions. Many of you, you've meditated with me for a long time. Some of you maybe for the first time. You all know the instructions. You've heard me talk so many times. In fact, you probably know my jokes and stories better than I do. Right? At this time, please follow the instructions. Otherwise, you'll find that it doesn't work. So that way, you'll know exactly what meditation is. You have direct experience of happiness and bliss and deep insights and powerful mindfulness, seeing things you've never seen before, and you find out, yes, you understand what the Buddha taught, you understand what meditation is, you understand why, say, the Dhammacetya Sutta, the monuments of the Dhamma, when people would go to the monasteries in the time of the Buddha, they'd see all these monks smiling. They were happy meditating. Not like some retreats I've been to, where people are just so miserable. That's why. And if you didn't do this in the last retreat, we should do it this retreat. If we're going to take a group photograph of the retreat, we should do it in the middle of the retreat when people are happy. Because in my retreats, at the end of the retreat, you can't get people to smile. Because they're so miserable, they can't meditate anymore, they have to go home. Oh. But in most retreats, they take the photograph afterwards. But people are so smiling. Because they're about to go home. No more pain. So, hopefully in this retreat, you'll find because of your peace, because of the energy, because of the happiness, because of the strong mindfulness, and the stillness of it all, you find yourself smiling more and more. If in this retreat, you feel like crying, please cry out of happiness. Sometimes it happens. You can't stop it. You just get so much joy coming up. Oh, it's just so nice. Cry. During this retreat, if it gets that you're getting so much deep meditation, it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, then just carry on meditating. You can speak tomorrow. If you get 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and breakfast, don't forget about breakfast. You eat any old day. It's very rare you get into deep meditation. Just go for it. And I'm very proud of you all because every retreat, at least are 3 or 4 people who miss their lunch. You see, I'm sitting in here at 11 o'clock and do ring a bell for lunch. Mr. Kerry is sitting here and they come up and they didn't feel like lunch. Meditation was much better than eating. Imagine that when they know they're not going to eat again until the following day. That's a really good sign that you're getting somewhere in your meditation. You're having more fun in meditating than eating. Of course, you get even much more fun than that. But so if it's working, just go for it, enjoy it. Don't worry about the time. Don't worry about food. Don't worry about sleeping. That'll come by itself later on. And when you get that deep, you're getting some understanding, some insights, into what the Buddha called the Four Noble Truths, what suffering is and the end of suffering, because you're getting close to the end of suffering. You know what the Buddha called the object of first jhana? He called it Sambodhisukha. He called it enlightenment, happiness. You're getting to feel there what enlightenment is like. Not as a theory, not some idea, but you're tasting it. It's like, you know, people in Australia, I hope none of you, especially those of you who are visiting from overseas, many visitors go to the wine region and go tasting all this wine. But here, you are tasting Nibbana. You are tasting the bliss of peace, the beauty of freedom, when you start to let go and the mind just becomes so still. So, this is what you're experiencing. That's why it's insight. That's why it's liberating. That's why it gives you the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Understands anatta, non-self. This, what's actually inside here? Can we go inside? You find out what's in the center of you. Who are you? And who, or rather what, makes you tick? What is this mechanism inside which makes you look this way and that way? What is controlling you? And what is this knowing? So you see all of that. That's where you get enlightened. So, you have many things in front of you in this meditation retreat. But the most important thing, remember the instructions, just sit there and do nothing. If it's too tired or too achy, sitting there, go walking. You don't want to sit, you don't want to walk, go and take a rest. And that way you'll be following the instructions and it works. So that's the, I don't really call it a pep talk, it's like the unpepping talk. To stop you sort of rushing around, relax, slow down, and allow meditation to happen. It doesn't really depend upon you. The more you get out of the way, the quicker it works. So don't come into this retreat with this big ego. I'm so good, I've done so much, I can do this meditation business. The more you have that sort of big me, controlling, doing things, I'm in command, I'm in control, the worse it's going to get for you. Just forget it, shut up. Just allow it to happen. It's so easy then. So, that's the talk for this evening. Just an overview of what I'm going to talk about later on in this retreat, in more detail. And you will always have the chance in the evening, between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock, it's question time. It's a time to stump the Ajahn. Writing your questions on a piece of paper, and I'll answer them in the evening. But they don't have to be serious questions, even funny questions are sometimes good as well. A little bit of laughter goes a long way at the end of a retreat. So the piece of paper outside, you can write them on the piece of paper, but please only one question a day from each person. Offer, you don't have to write a question, but no more than one question. Because sometimes some people, they spend all day not watching their breath or letting go, they spend all day thinking about questions. Can I see that? Can I recognise the writing? Oh, here we go again. So please, no more than one question per person. Okay, so there we go. Any questions now about the retreat or about the meditation? Any problems? Yes.
I'm not sure. Am I need to ring the bell or this thing?
Nah. No, don't.
No.
No bell. Is that your duty you've been given?
Well,
aren't you lucky? You've got no duties. Yeah.
So we haven't got a clock.
Yeah, okay, you don't need a clock now. Because you'd all know what time breakfast is. I'm sure you don't need a bell to know what breakfast time is tomorrow morning. You'll wake up, you know what time sort of lunch is. So, how can you do that? Just forget about the time. So no bell. So in the morning, some of you've got alarm clocks. If you really want to wake up at a certain time in the morning, you can try, the programming your mindfulness. It's a great little bit of fun to do. This evening you go to bed, get yourself nice and comfortable under the blankets, head on your pillow, just before you go to sleep, tell yourself, I am going to get up at whichever time you want to get up. Say like 5 o'clock. Say, I will wake up at 5 o'clock. As mindful, as clear as you can, repeat it 2 times. I will wake up at 5 o'clock. I will wake up at 5 o'clock. And listen to yourself when you say that. Allow it to actually to sink in. And then forget about it and go to sleep. Amazing, just you'll wake up a couple of minutes either side of 5 o'clock. And it's usually about 95% success rate. So you don't need alarm clocks. Just tell yourself, I will get up at this time. If you really want to. That's marvellous to do that. That's actually what you do in deep meditation. If you're liable to get into deep meditation, you have to come out at a certain time. In the deep meditation, you won't hear alarm clocks or bells. So deep meditation, you usually tell yourself, I'm going to go into deep meditation for, say, 2 hours. And then after 2 hours, you just come out. This is the way the mind works. It's programmed. So yes, no bells. Does anyone, those people who've got their duties to be done, whether it's like doing the breakfast or helping with the lunch or cleaning up afterwards, try and do it in silence if at all possible. Make it a practice of mindfulness. So that's not an opportunity to have a good chat because you're working in the back there. Find out, where are you from? Oh, where are you from? What are you meditating on? Well, I'm meditating. Oh, be quiet. And try not to make noise when you're cleaning the dishes, so there's no clangs. So that becomes a nice practice, so it's not really a chore, it's more of an opportunity to to be mindful, to meditate. So whatever your joy you have, make it a practice. You're doing it out of love, out of compassion. It's part of the whole practice here. Even when you go to the toilet, make that mindful. Men, make sure your aim is correct. And just make sure that you don't force yourself, you just sit down and relax. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we go to jhana in the toilet cubicle, so we don't have to come back 5 hours later. Relax, whatever you have to do here. So yeah, that'll be all in the morning. Any other questions? Okay, so we can finish off then. So those of you who want to go and have a rest, please go and have a rest. Those of you who want to go to the toilet, please go to the toilet. Those of you who want to meditate some more. So you can practice freedom. Okay? And I'll see you tomorrow. Good night.